Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island Beer Company, which believes great beer can be as exciting as great music. Since 1988, Goose Island has been committed to that belief by brewing new styles of beer like 312 Urban Wheat Ale, Sophie Farmhouse Ale, and Bourbon County Stout. Goose Island, to what's next? GooseIsland.com.
This is Sound Opinions, and Craig, you know, we are moving quickly toward our 500th show on public radio. We had this ratings guide in the beginning when we started out. Buy it, burn it, trash it. Burn it being like to copy a CD. We've now been doing this show long enough. The technology has passed it. We now rate records on the buy it, try it, trash it scale. We're going to rate four important new late spring, early summer releases later in the show. But first, we have some music news.
First things first, I'm the realest. Realest. Drop this and let the whole world feel it.
Let them feel it.
And I'm still in the murder business. I can hold you down like I'm giving lessons in physics.
Right, right.
You should want a bad chick like this.
Huh?
Drop it low and pick it up just like this.
Yeah.
Cup of Ace, cup of Goose, cup of Chris. I heal something worth a half a ticket on my wrist.
On my wrist.
Taking all the liquor straight. Never chase that.
Never.
Stop like we bring an 88 back.
What?
Bring the hooks in where the bass at. Champagne spilling, you should taste that.
I'm so fancy. You already know I'm in the.
That's a little bit of Fancy by Iggy Azalea. Greg, the commercial hit of the summer in 2014, according to many sources. Personally, I would have gone with Meghan Trainor's All About That Bass. That was my summer song last year. The weather's finally changing here in Chicago, and we're thinking about summer songs. We've done shows about this in the past. An interesting statistical analysis recently on Nate Silver's 538 website about summer songs coming out earlier and earlier in the year as the music industry really tries to manufacture the big summer hit and give it to us early on. Statistics. In the last 30 years, 36% of the huge summer hits have come out in April or earlier, and 36% have come out in May. If you look at the last decade, the most recent data shows that 8 of the top 10 summer songs came out in April or earlier. Look at that list.
Yeah, Jim, it's interesting. You know, you mentioned Fancy, and that did rule in 2014, despite your claim of Meghan Trainor's All About That Bass. I think All About That Bass was maybe a little later, on the later side of summer.
It was late summer, but it was massive. So,
Fancy,
you know.
Fancy got the early part of the summer. But 2013, Blurred Lines, Robin Thicke and Pharrell and T.I., all that trouble it's gotten into recently with the legal issues, nonetheless, ruled the summer of 2013, although I personally thought Daft Punk's Get Lucky was the song of summer for 2013. Gangnam Style, you couldn't escape it in 2012. In 2010, California Girls by Katy Perry. Katy Perry ran the pop charts in the summer of 2010. I Got a Feeling by Black Eyed Peas. They were everywhere in 2009. Katy Perry again in 2008 with I Kissed a Girl. And Umbrella, of course, with Rihanna and Jay-Z in 2007. You could predict these songs, you know, starting in March, you kind of knew that these songs were just going to dominate. They weren't going to leave radio. They were going to be everywhere. This year, you and I were talking about this, you know, a few minutes ago.
I'm not hearing one.
What's the song this summer? So we want to hear from our listeners. Give us a call, 888-859-1800, and tell us what the song of the summer of 2015 is going to be.
That is music from The Best Show, the popular, long-running comedy musical call-in show that began on WFMU in 2000 and continues today as a podcast. The Best Show is hosted by comedian Tom Sharpling, but the highlight of each program is when John Worster, also known as the drummer for Superchunk, calls into the show in character in the guise of various inhabitants of the fictional town of Newbridge, New Jersey.
The cult phenomenon is now being celebrated with a whopping 16-disc Greatest Hits box set from the reissue label Numero Group, which is better known for unearthing forgotten gems from small R&B labels. And today, we have the pleasure of speaking with Tom Sharpling and John Worster of The Best Show. Hey, guys. Welcome to Sound Opinions.
Hey.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
So tell us how this thing got started. This has become a podcast phenomenon, The Best Show. And it starts at a My Bloody Valentine concert, right? Is that basically the genesis story of you two getting together and starting to work together?
That is when I met Tom, yes. How's this for a power bill? It was My Bloody Valentine, Superchunk, and Pavement.
Wow.
At the Ritz. I think it was called the Ritz at that point, but it was Studio 54 before
right.
that.
In New York City.
Yes. And we just hit it off about Chris Elliott. That's what we talked about first.
Yeah.
Before he was anybody.
Well, at that point, he was well into watching his sitcom Get a Life not find an audience except for two guys at a My Bloody Valentine Pavement Superchunk show, apparently.
So how many years in total did you guys do? I mean, the best show starts out as this idea and eventually makes its way to WFMU, the legendary progressive station, freeform station in New Jersey. Right? How many years total on FMU?
13 years of the best show. I had been doing a music show on WFMU, and that show, over the course of some time, morphed into the best show in 2000.
Because John would often call in character, right? When you were still playing music,
John would call in. I guess you could say that show majored in music and minored in comedy, and then we switched those two things. When we called it the best show.
Which is why we're talking to you, because the music's always been, don't you think, Greg, a key component. I mean, there's a rock spirit to this comedy.
Even if there's not necessarily music being played on the show, right?
Right. There's a lot of talking about music. One of our early calls that is my mother's favorite call involves I play a guy who is trying to rip people off on eBay, and after we talk about eBay, I fall down the steps, and then I am lying at the bottom of my steps, dying with all my limbs broken, and Tom and I just start talking about rock stuff.
Like that band Buck Cherry, remember them?
Sure.
Came out, and it was like, you know, it appealed to people who were 12 when, you know, when, like, Powerage came out, AC/DC, you know?
Sure.
So it's like, it's almost like kind of capturing your lost childhood or something.
That band...
I long for my childhood when I had legs and arms that worked.
That's just an example of what we can get into.
How much of this stuff was improvised at the start? I mean, was it just completely off the top of your heads, or did you actually have kind of a little bit of a game plan going in before, like, a typical phone call?
We always had a game plan of sorts. The early calls are a little looser. Like the first call we did was called Rock Rotten Rule, and that's where I called in as this guy that had written a completely idiotic rock reference book where he tells you who rocks, rots, and rules.
All right, who rules?
Yeah,
The Who, Black Crowes, Kiss, Ramones, Everclear.
Everclear?
Yeah. Puff Daddy.
Puff Dickie. Daddy?
Yeah. You don't think he rules?
I personally don't think he rules. That's just me, though. I guess you didn't poll me for your book.
And we had maybe a two-page little outline of that, and I had some examples of who rocked, who rotted, and who ruled. But then a lot of that we just started talking, and more comedy came out of that, and people started calling in, and that would drive the call other places, but now they're I would say about 90% planned out.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love the way people took seriously. They thought that you were seriously discussing rating bands as rock, rot, or rule. You know, I do take umbrage to him describing it, Greg, as idiotic, because I reviewed the book when it came out and said that it was the single most essential rock consumer guide ever, putting Robert Kreisky out of shame.
That's right. Jim, I think you might have written the very first review of Rock, Rotten, Roll.
I did. It was a great point of pride. See, so I made you guys what you are today.
I see it that way.
Were there particular critics that you based that on?
I think it was based more on just the idea of people, of one person appointing themselves an authority on anything, and then you look and they don't have
any credentials,
clout to do it, but they're going to talk the talk, even though they're not necessarily walking the walk.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of the way people fall in line with reviews and with opinions like that, and And conversely, the way people get so upset about reviews and things when it's just so arbitrary in the larger scheme of things. If you like it, you like it. If you don't, you don't.
Well,
can't worry about what other people think.
People take it so personally, though. That's the one thing we find as people who actually do this for a living, you know, not as well as John and Tom do with Rock, Rotten, Rule, but we sort of do this, you know, thing where you'll put out an opinion out there that happens to be your opinion and your opinion alone, and everybody takes umbrage because it's, you know, you're dealing with my band, man, or my artist, my favorite artist. And they take it way more personally almost than any other art form, I find. And it seems like you were tapping into that.
Yeah. My character in the course of this call makes the very bold statement that madness rules because they invented ska.
Right.
And a guy called in and he was, just like you said, he was furious. He could not believe that someone would say such a thing.
I hold in my hand an album. It's called The History of Ska, Volume 2, The Golden Years, 1966 through 69. Would you like to hear the first cut by the Skatalites?
Is it called Our House?
No. Dude, that's madness.
Yeah.
I'm talking 66, pal.
One Step Beyond.
You're an ass.
I hope we're on a 7-second delay here.
One Step Beyond!
And I think he called back two more times, maybe.
Yeah, he wanted to school you on the 40-year history of ska.
He did.
Not getting the joke at all. But John, you also would be calling in. I gather you were often on tour, you know, probably had just set up the drums, right? And then would, like, take a break and call in, sometimes in character, as Gene Simmons.
Hello, is this Tom?
It is Tom.
Hello, Tom. It's Gene Simmons of KISS. Listen, I understand you're having a little pledge drive tonight. Is that correct?
We are having a pledge drive. It's the WFMU fundraiser.
This is very exciting for you, isn't it?
To do the fundraiser?
No, talking to me.
Oh, to talk to you.
Wait, how did you pull that off?
Well, there was about 13 years of standing in a dark alley behind a rock club trying not to do a stupid voice too loud so people wouldn't think there was a crazy guy back there in the trash cans. I'm on the road maybe, God, it seems like two-thirds of every year now. So, I'm somewhere making a call every Tuesday night.
Well, all right. So Andrew Gill, who's a key member here of the Sound Opinions team, helps us with all of our live shoots for bands. And his theory is that the entire success of what you guys have done over the last decade and a half is based on a million bands crossing the country at any given time in a van, facing 7.5-hour drives with nothing to do and listening to you two.
That's how we got the word out there originally. When I was in Superchunk, I'm still in Superchunk, but when we were touring all the time in the 90s, that's how we spent our days. You know, you're playing loud rock all night, and the last thing you want to do during the day while you're driving is listen to more loud rock. So these prank call tapes would kind of get exchanged between bands, the Jerky Boys and the Tube Bar tapes, things like that. And then the first two calls that Tom and I did, the aforementioned Rock, Rotten, Rule, and this one called Conventions, Inc., where I play this crazy guy that puts on all these dumb conventions. We put those on a cassette and we gave them to bands. Guided by Voices was one of the first bands. Spoon, Sleater-Kinney, and they just exchanged hands over and over again. And I think that's how people became aware of us at the beginning.
Hey, I was wondering if you could play something from the new Lovely Boys CD.
Lovely Boys.
Yeah.
I don't think I have that.
Okay. How about something by the Craigs?
The Craigs. I don't think I have that.
Well, just play anything by any of the bands who are going to be at the festival this weekend.
What festival?
You're kidding. Poptastrophe 2007.
Well, what is that? Poptastrophe?
Yeah. It's this huge power pop fest.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's happening in Newbridge down by the dock. And I'll tell you right now.
Yeah?
It's going to be bigger than the Paisley Pop Pop-a-thon last year in Des Moines. And it's definitely going to make January's Popadelphia Pop Nation Fest look like Poptopia 2002.
given what a receptive place FMU was, and I grew up listening to it and loving it, right? Visiting them out in when they were in the Oranges, right? Why did you guys leave?
The show, it was pretty much becoming a full-time job, and there's just a crossroads where it's like, either we have to stop doing this, or we have to do a worse version of it that takes less time, or we have to see if there's another place to do this version of the show where there's the potential of getting paid. And WFMU is a non-commercial station, and that's just, I think it's a great setup, but it's not meant to support a show that keeps growing and growing like the best show was. So
you were eager to sell out. And decided to become your own podcast and make your millions that way. That's what you're saying.
If I can just move this money away from it's blocking the mic, the stack of money that I have in front of me. I just need to, it might be muffling me a little bit, so I'm going to just slide this giant stack of money over to the side.
We have to underscore the absurdity of this. 16 CDs from the Numero Group, the premier reissue label in America today, and the live tour, which includes a stop at Lincoln Hall. Yeah. I swear this is like one of your routines, except it's true.
Jim, you're hurting our feelings.
Fine, we're not putting the box out now.
I just called Rock Rotten Rule the indispensable rock tome of all time. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I just had all the box sets dumped in the ocean. You know, about a year ago, we were looking at all of these things, and we were kind of like, if all of these elements stay on track the way they are, it's like the show will be back, and then this box set will come out, and then we can do live shows around that, and this we did a thing for Adult Swim, that will have come out, and all, it's just like, if everything stayed on target, they would all converge, and this is the moment that they are converging.
It's like you had a manager or something.
Right? And we still can't afford new sneakers.
Right, right. All right, Tom Sharpling and John Worster, thanks for talking with us today, guys, on the Rock, Rot, and Rule scale. I say this interview absolutely ruled.
All right. Bye.
Thanks again, guys.
Coming up, we've got reviews of major spring releases from Mumford & Sons, Alabama Shakes, Sufjan Stevens, and Van Hunt. Then it's Jim's turn to talk about a song he can't live without. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and distributed by PRX.